ਬਾਕੀ ਮੈਂ ਤੁਹਾਨੂੰ ਦੱਸਦਾ ਕਿ ਪ੍ਰੋਗਰਾਮ ਦੇ ਅਗਲੇ ਹਿੱਸੇ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਅੱਜ ਸਾਡੇ ਨਾਲ ਮਿਸਟਰ ਇਅਨ ਬਲੈਕ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਕਰਨਗੇ। ਇਅਨ ਬਲੈਕ ਕੋਈ ਨਵਾਂ ਨਾਂ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੈ, ਉਹ ਪਹਿਲਾਂ ਬ੍ਰਿਟਿਸ਼ ਕੋਲੰਬੀਆ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਲਿਬਰਲ ਪਾਰਟੀ ਦੇ ਕੈਬਨਿਟ ਮਿਨਿਸਟਰ ਰਹੇ ਆ, ਜਦੋਂ ਪ੍ਰੀਮੀਅਰ ਗੋਰਡਨ ਕੈਂਬਲ ਹੋਇਆ ਕਰਦੇ ਸਨ ਉਦੋਂ ਲੇਬਰ ਮਿਨਿਸਟਰ ਸਨ, ਫਿਰ ਉਸ ਤੋਂ ਬਾਅਦ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਮਿਨਿਸਟਰ ਆਫ ਸਮਾਲ ਬਿਜ਼ਨਸ ਟੈਕਨੋਲੋਜੀ ਅਤੇ ਇਕਨੋਮਿਕ ਡਿਵੈਲਪਮੈਂਟ ਦੀ ਜਿਹੜੀ ਮਿਨਿਸਟਰੀ ਸੀ ਉਹ ਚਲਾਈ, ਅਤੇ ਉਹ ਕਾਫੀ ਲੰਬਾ ਸਮਾਂ ਉਸ ਸਰਕਾਰ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਰਹੇ ਹਨ। ਹੁਣ BC ਦੀ ਕੰਜ਼ਰਵੇਟਿਵ ਪਾਰਟੀ ਵੱਲੋਂ ਲੀਡਰਸ਼ਿਪ ਦੀ ਜਿਹੜੀ ਰੇਸ ਚੱਲ ਰਹੀ ਹੈ ਉਸ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਉਹ ਕਾਫੀ ਸਿਰਕੱਢ ਉਮੀਦਵਾਰ ਹਨ। ਅੱਜ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨਾਲ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਹੋਏਗੀ। ਇਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਕਾਫੀ ਕੈਂਡੀਡੇਟ ਨੇ, 11 ਕੈਂਡੀਡੇਟ ਪਹਿਲਾਂ ਦੱਸਿਆ ਗਿਆ ਸੀ। ਸੋ ਉਹ ਕੈਂਡੀਡੇਟਸ ਜਿਹੜੇ ਨੇ ਵਾਰ ਵਾਰ ਅਸੀਂ ਤੁਹਾਨੂੰ ਇੰਟਰੋਡਿਊਸ ਕਰਾਵਾਂਗੇ ਤਾਂ ਕਿ ਤੁਹਾਨੂੰ ਪਤਾ ਲੱਗ ਸਕੇ ਕਿ ਇਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚੋਂ ਕਿਹੜਾ ਵਿਅਕਤੀ ਦਾ ਬੈਕਗਰਾਊਂਡ ਕੀ ਹੈ ਅਤੇ ਕਿਹੜਾ ਤੁਹਾਡੇ ਕਾਬਲ ਹੋਵੇਗਾ, ਤੁਸੀਂ ਕਿਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਕਾਬਲ ਸਮਝਦੇ ਹੋ। ਇਸ ਕਿਸਮ ਦੀ ਗੱਲਬਾਤ ਅੱਜ ਇਅਨ ਬਲੈਕ ਹੋਣ ਜਾ ਰਹੀ ਹੈ। Mr. Black, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks so much for having me here. Good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very much. And tell us more about yourself. What made you run for this leadership race?
Well, as some of your listeners will know, I was twice elected as an MLA and a cabinet minister. I was the youngest one, actually, in Gordon Campbell's government. And so I know well what it's like when government is performing well, when it is achieving great things for the people of British Columbia. And I know that what we have right now is the exact opposite of that. Our economy is hurting. Our families are hurting. The construction industry, the trucking industry, our natural resources industry, people are worried about their jobs. And right now, they're also worried about whether they even own their homes. They're worried about violence and extortion and drugs. And it is time for a change in Victoria. And I believe that as I am the only candidate in this contest who's beaten the NDP before, I am the only one who can beat them again.
Just looking on the side here, you are a Liberal.
I'm a BC. I was a BC Liberal, yes.
Yeah. You have Liberal views. And this race is a Conservative Party's leadership race. A lot of people are asking that, how can a liberal view person be a conservative, or he's just here for the leadership race only, because a lot of people think that anybody who becomes the leader of the Conservative Party will be the next premier.
I've heard that.
What is the real intention behind it?
Well, I've been, I was a Pierre Poilievre acclaimed candidate in the federal election as a conservative just 8 or 9 months ago. And I chaired the conservative election, federal conservative campaign in my area in 2021, and was on the advisory board of elections for about 10 years before that. And I've raised money for the Conservative Party for about 25 years. So my conservative credentials are not in question. What listeners will of course, be interested in knowing is that there are many, many provincial parties in Canada where they are a combination of federal Liberals and federal Conservatives in order to beat the NDP. The Manitoba Conservatives, when I was a boy in Manitoba, the Conservative Party of Manitoba was red people and blue people who would fight each other ferociously federally and then come back together and hug and sing Kumbaya and then go on to try to defeat the NDP. The Saskatchewan Party, very similar, and the BC Liberal Party was the same way. I think people should remember that, or ask the question, why did the BC Liberal Party feel compelled to change their name? It's because there are so many of us in there who are federal conservatives. But, you know, it's a tradition here in BC that when you put good ideas in front of the people that reflect conservative values, governments being small, taxes being low, public safety being of a big concern, responsible and very strict drug policy and criminal activity crackdowns, those are things that appeal to people regardless of whether they're federal conservatives or federal Liberals. So if you stick to those basic conservative principles and package something for the population in terms of a political platform, people will vote for that kind of common sense, and they won't wonder whether they're federal Liberals or federal Conservatives or of no fixed political party when they do so.
So it's a very crowded place now. There are over 11 people, I guess. No, there's a left.
It's down to 9 now. It's down to 9.
And what distinguishes you from the rest of the people?
I believe that the next leader of the BC Conservative Party must have three things. And I'm the only one who's got those three. Number one, a track record of having led something. I've been president and CEO of seven different companies, specializing in fixing problems and getting the financial situation back in order. And that's a good definition of British Columbia at the moment. Number two, somebody who understands public policy, especially economic public policy. I'm the only candidate who served as a cabinet minister in government and only one who served at the Treasury Board table, where you learn how to build what is now a $90 billion a year budget. And that's the third criteria, is having somebody who has been a cabinet minister and who has served on Treasury Board. Because we don't have time to train a new premier. We don't have time to invite people into these very, very senior positions who have no experience of being elected before and no experience of having been in government before. So I'm the only one that can say, I'm the only one who can beat the NDP because I've already done it twice.
Mm-hmm. When John Rusted was building this party from the scratch, where were you at that time? I mean, now when this party has gained a lot of momentum, a lot of people, like you said, 11 people were suddenly interested in becoming the leader of the party. Mm-hmm. So at that time, why didn't you join the party?
Tracking of political donations that goes back, and I saw it published the other day. I don't follow such things myself, but the information is publicly available online, and you'll see that my donations to the BC Conservative Party coincided with when John took over as the leader. Similarly, my federal conservative donations will go back apparently to 2005. I didn't realize I published records that far back. John and I were elected on the same day together, and for all the challenges associated with his leadership over the last number of months leading up to him stepping down in December, I really hope people reflect fondly on what he achieved, taking a party from next to nothing and taking it within 395 votes of actually forming government. He did very well.
So what do you feel is missing in the Conservative Party that you can give in, like you can fill that?
Well, My resume, as you mentioned, my background is getting involved in companies that are broken or that need some evolution and some leadership, and getting the people focused on common objectives. As a business leader, I did that 7 times, and I believe that's what the BC Conservative Party needs as well. It needs to evolve. It's about 2 years old in its current form, as you mentioned, and it has this amazing opportunity to take it to the next level and make it ready to govern and be able to attract voters from across British Columbia who maybe didn't vote Conservative last time or didn't vote at all. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm able to do because I have that in my background of getting people focused on one or two key objectives, measuring the outcomes, setting expectations, holding people accountable. And we have to do that in the party in terms of building out 93 ridings, putting in place a provincial fundraising system, recruiting some great candidates from across the Lower Mainland and across all of British Columbia, actually. And also having the staff ready to help us be very good at what we do so that there's a consistency of message and a very high energy and excitement around forming government, which I believe the people will give us the chance to do in the next election.
Okay, show us the plan. Like, in the event you are elected as the leader of this party,
yes,
what would you immediately do in order to relieve the cost of living pressure?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you said from the elected the leader of the party, I have to become premier first. So we have to get the team ready to win an election.
To bring
to the party or to the province?
To the province.
Well, I think there's a few things we can do right away. First of all, we have to repeal the piece of legislation called DRIPA and another piece of legislation called, Section 8.1 of the Interpretations Act, because we have made British Columbia, not we, the NDP, has made British Columbia uninvestable because of the uncertainty that they have deliberately placed into our economy. Major project. I guarantee you, some of your listeners right now, the business people in this community, who could be sitting on $10, $20, $50 million of investment, have decided they're not going to do so until this matter is settled. Well, that you can add many zeros to that, for people who want to reinvest perhaps in forestry, mining, natural gas, and oil, because we have sent a very clear signal that you cannot rely on British Columbia as a business partner at the moment. That must be fixed. So that's one of the first things. The other thing I would do is repeal the payroll tax for all the small business owners in this province. We have to get our taxes down and make them competitive once again. So I'd certainly do that. I would also look to the travesty around mental health and drug addiction in this province, and I've announced that I would redevelop the Riverview lands to build a world-class center on mental health, drug addiction recovery, and also brain injury, because there's an overlap between the medical science and the treatment for people with brain injuries as well. But that would be both a facility where we can take people off the streets and put them in involuntary care, which will have some legal challenges, but they are challenges I am willing to take on, but also have centers around the province as well that reflect the best science and the best humane treatment for these people who can't take care of themselves. And the last thing I say, I mean, there's a long list I could go on, but one of the very important things is around safety and crime. We've got situations throughout British Columbia, but you see, you hear a lot about it, of course, here in Surrey, on extortion. You know, it's very, very problematic, and we've got some things we can do in that area that aren't being done at the moment.
Okay, that's what you can do about the policies of the government and the provincial government of BC. What would you do if you're elected the leader of this party in order to make more competent to compete against NDP?
Great question.
The ruling party.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's a tired party. It's out of ideas for sure. This is a party that has now put a budget in place with a $13 billion deficit. I'll be surprised if it doesn't hit 15. And only 5 years ago, they had a $5 billion surplus. Your grandchildren and mine will be paying off that debt. And the actual debt load of the province, it was $66 billion when they took office in 2017. Mm-hmm. And British Columbia at the time was about 160-odd years old, right? And so it took 160 years to get to that level of $66 billion. And now, 9 years after the NDP, it will be $190 billion. So this government has tripled the debt in less than 10 years after taking 160 odd years to get to the starting point. That's meaningful for your listeners, because the interest on that debt, paying the interest on that debt, is real cash. And that is now coming out of other things that government could spend money on, such that you now have healthcare as the most expensive ministry in government, then education, and then interest payments. It's like credit card debt. All of your listeners who've got credit cards and pay that interest every month, that's what government's doing. So that has to be fixed. But in order to get that, as you mentioned, we need to win the election. So we've got an opposition in the government at the moment who is making all kinds of mistakes. Nothing is going well. Healthcare, education, law and order, you can't point to anything. So our party needs to do a few things. First of all, we need to get everybody united. And because of my background with business and stepping into organizations where people don't necessarily work well together, but I can do that because I've done it many, many times. So we've got to get our politicians in the party, some wonderful men and women, many of whom are serving in office for the first time in any job, never mind MLA, and really start getting them to act like a team. Because politics is a team sport at that caucus level. And when you're in a caucus, you owe something to each other. I owe something to you. You owe something to me. We will reset the tone on that, get everybody working together, and be honest with each other about what we can achieve together, get us all focused, and then wrap that into a terrific and compelling and optimistic message for the people of the province.
So what do you think about the Musqueam tribe, the Musqueam nation, that they have been given the title of the Metro Vancouver? There is a lot of talk about it nowadays. What's your thoughts on that? Are you familiar with this?
I am. So what you heard yesterday was a very vague announcement that apparently the federal government has cut a deal with the Musqueam Nation around rights and title for a very large part of Metro Vancouver. My first reaction was I was horrified. But then the second reaction I had is I was angry. I was angry because at a time when the NDP government should be trying to undo the damage caused by their very deliberate and very sneaky approach with First Nations over the last 5 years that led to things like the Cowichan decision in August, which caused all of us to wonder whether we actually own our homes or not.
Richmond and Kamloops.
Especially, yeah, the entrance to the Fraser River in Richmond, that's right. At a time when they should be trying to undo that damage and get us back to where we need to be, we find out yesterday that after lying about it, after saying they knew nothing about the agreement, and that would be bad enough. How weak is the provincial government when they're not even included in a conversation with the federal government and a First Nations that's right in the heart of the Lower Mainland of British Columbia? Mm-hmm. And so that was bad enough. But then we find out, actually, they were. So they were lying about it.
We'll leave the premier out of it.
Yeah.
What impact this decision will have on the people of Metro Vancouver?
Well, we don't know because we've not seen the agreement yet. That's part of the problem. So the NDP were involved in this thing after saying they weren't. There was no transparency. There was no details given to anybody. We still don't know what the agreement says, and we're hoping to learn more today because this is now a very big deal.
What do you think about this announcement about the time change?
I think for many of us, it's not that big. I think the province, frankly, wanted to tell something.
One of my callers said it's a distractor.
To who?
Distractor. From the budget.
Yes, no, I think it absolutely, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think it gives them something to talk about other than the many failures of the government, the financials, the First Nations, yesterday, the Musqueam. I think that the businesses have some concerns. Anyone who does business down the west coast of the United States of America suddenly is no longer in the same time zone as for example, California. So we've got 150,000 people in British Columbia who work in the technology sector. Almost all of them have some connection to Silicon Valley. And so that's actually quite, I think, cavalier and thoughtless. It's a stunt. I actually think it's a bit of a stunt. I think we all kind of like it, but politically it's a stunt.
I have no business in California.
Yes.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
But ordinary people, it doesn't make a difference, would it?
I would agree. I actually don't mind it myself at a personal level. I don't like changing the clocks and trying to remember when to go to bed and when to get up twice a year. It's a distraction, and it annoys my dog.
Okay, in closing, please explain it to the listeners that how does this election work? Because your leadership election of Conservative Party of BC is different than the others. Like, you have to go into each constituency in order to win 100 delegates?
That's right. 100 votes. So 100 votes? Everybody gets a vote, but every riding in British Columbia, there are 93 of them. I think there's 9 or 11 here in Surrey. 93 across the province. And so each of those ridings gets assigned 100 points. And so the percentage of the votes that you get in each riding calculates to, and so if there's, 200 votes in a given riding and you get, 50 of them, then you get 25% of the votes in that riding, or 25 points, if you will. And that all translates through to determining 50% plus one of all the points. So 93 ridings is a total of 9,300 points. Mm-hmm. I think that works out to 4,651 points are needed to win, and that's how they're calculated across. But it's a preferred ballot. So if any of your listeners want to join the party and vote for me in the first place, in position number one, that's fabulous. You then rank everybody else. And so if the person in last place gets dropped off, all of that person's ballots get redistributed across the other people left in the contest. So it's a ranked ballot, 93 ridings.
So would that mean that you have to approach people in Castlegar, in Castlelaw, Salamo,
yes, sir,
Fort Nelson? Like, you have to reach those people?
Yes, sir. In fact, I'm home for 2 days and gone for five, 2 days, gone for eight, 2 days. Like, so I'm home. My voice is a little bit deeper. Your listeners who've heard me before know that my voice is normally a little higher than this. But, for example, I got home late Saturday night. I drove the Coquihalla Highway. I got home at 2 in the morning. And then we had some meetings in South Surrey. And tonight I'm back on Vancouver Island, off to the Sunshine Coast of the weekend, home for a day, and then up north after that. So it's exciting. It's exhilarating, but yes, we are meeting British Columbians and prospective Conservative Party members from across the province, and I couldn't be having more fun.
How's your health and how much money you have?
Well, I think I got $20 in my pocket. my health is great. I actually weighed myself this morning. I'm down a couple of pounds, so campaigning is hard work, and it's not a health routine I'd recommend, but it seems to be working for me.
Because in this race, funds have become an issue time and again. So you have enough, plenty of funds.
You know what? It helps because I have the experience, because I've been a cabinet minister in this government before, because I've been a business leader in British Columbia. I was the CEO of the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade. Mm-hmm. So my business relationships are province-wide in the natural resources sector up north, right through the Fraser Valley and the agricultural sector, and into the Kootenays and of course, Vancouver Island, where I have family. So I'm fortunate. I've got a very solid network, which is what it takes to be competitive in this race. And the business community knows what I can do. They know I can turn things around. They know I understand economics, and they know I can lead people. And so their support means a lot, and that'll be the secret to our success.
Mr. Black, what would you like to say to the undecided Conservative Party members?
If you're not happy with where things are at in government, if you don't believe your government is working for you, you make the change two ways. You can vote at the election, or you can join a political party that reflects your values and decides who leads it. If you believe in low taxes, a small enough government so that we provide the basics of healthcare and education, a government that does not tell you how to pray, a government that does not interfere in your family life, a government that believes in low regulation so that small business owners can do really, really well, that's a conservative. And if you believe in those types of things and you want to have a say in our leadership, now's the time to join. It costs $25 for 4 years, and you can get a membership at www.ianblack.ca. There's two or three different ways to spell Ian, but we've got them all covered. It's ianblack.ca. And then when it comes time to vote, vote for me first, because if you want change, vote for the guy who has shown he knows how to lead change. And if you want to beat the NDP, vote for the guy who's already beaten the NDP twice. That's my message.
I understand our former Mayor Diana Watts supports you. Is it true?
I am honored to have her as our co-chair, along with MLA Teresa Watt in Richmond, and one of the most honorable and honest men in politics, Ed Fast, out in Abbotsford. But Diane Watts is an incredible leader. She's a dear friend. She has been very, very helpful to me, and we speak almost every day. Mm-hmm. And she believes in what we are trying to do. She believes in the change that's needed, and she believes in my ability to drive that change, and I'm very grateful to her for the support and honored to call her my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And we'll be talking to you again.
Anytime you like. Thanks so much for having me here.
Okay. Bye-bye.